Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Boom Live, a milestone edition. This is actually episode 300. The site, prowrestling.net, turned 16 last month, and here we are celebrating this milestone. What does that all mean? It means I feel old, but we have a lot to talk about today, including last night's AEW Revolution pay-per-view event. Tony Khan hinting that he thought it was maybe the greatest pay-per-view of all time. I would not go that far with it, but I did think it was a very good show. I thought they sent Sting out in grand fashion, which was the most important thing about last night's show. And yeah, really enjoyed it. I gave the event a B-plus grade in our same night audio review that was co-hosted by Jake Barnett and Will Pruitt. Will gave it an all-out A, and Jake gave it an A-minus. So very high grades. I can remember, I never remember the names of the pay-per-views. I'm bad at that. They just haven't stuck with me the way that like SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble have. Now some of the non-big WWE pay-per-views I'm the same way with. But the show where Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson arrived at the same time, I think that was the one that all three of us gave that show an A. But it's rare that, Will and Jake are A and A minus, and so I think it does speak very highly of this show. My criticisms remain with the fact that AEW just tries to cram too much in, that there's not enough time between matches. They don't let things breathe, and there were a couple of matches that didn't quite click. My hit list is available right now at prowrestling.net if you'd like to check that out. And coming up here shortly, Colin McGuire's take on this show will also be available at prowrestling.net. 5 takeaways from AEW Revolution that should be available shortly on the website. I will be joined by Johnny Fairplay, the reality television Hall of Famer. He was on Survivor. He was one of the stars, if not the star, of House of Villains. Did more for pinball than I think anybody has in many years by appearing on that show and talking about his love of all things pinball. He was in attendance at Revolution, not far behind the broadcast table. We'll find out if he attacked Don Callis and continued their feud or not when we bring him in shortly. I do see we have a couple of callers lined up ready to chat with us as well. If you would like to join us today, the number to do so is 773-897-6321. Once you do that, hit 1 on your phone. That lets us know that you want to join the conversation and you're not just in listen-only mode. And if you want to email your questions, if some people have done, send them to dotnetjason@gmail.com. Just be sure to spell it out. dotnetjason@gmail.com. Why do I have to spell that out? Because my girlfriend, of all people, when the site launched and I had this new email address, decided to write .netjason@gmail.com and couldn't understand why I wasn't getting the emails. Yes, I still give her a hard time about that. Speaking of the girlfriend, if you hear any whining today, like faint whining, that would probably be one of my dogs, Obi. The gal has the day off, and she actually just headed out to go shopping. It's appropriate. We saw Nikita Koloff last night because Obi, how you say, mama's boy? Yeah, very much a mama's boy and very much starts whining when she leaves the house, even though she's not even supposed to be home today, Obi. Get over it, dude. Anyway, with all of that said, let's bring in the co-host of the show. Again, he was at AEW Revolution in person, and I want to talk to him about that, and also Paul Heyman being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. That announcement was made today. The AP's Dan Gelston, good dude, was the one who put that out there for the world, and Paul Heyman finally entering the WWE Hall of Fame, appropriately enough, in Philadelphia, which was the home base of Extreme Championship Wrestling. But Johnny, welcome to the show, and your thoughts on attending AEW Revolution in person. What would you give the letter grade for this event?
A. I loved it.
Great.
It was exciting.
Tell me what you liked.
It was great. So, like, I ended up second row. Like, in front of me was Magnum TA and Nikita Koloff. And Nikita got there, like, in between the matches, before the end. And he was so giddy, it was so cool watching Nikita, he's doing selfies and he's like sitting by himself because like they're waiting for the other people to get there, and so he's just turning around and talking to everybody. I'm just like, I think they want you to look that way. And then Magnum got there and Ricky, it was so cool. And And before the FTR tag match, I'm like, I was like, ah, perfect time. Let me run and grab, because they had a concession stand on the lower level, like right there by the floor seating. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to run over there real quick. And so I go to run. This guy grabs me and goes, you're in the way. And I'm like, I'm in the way of what? And then right there is where Moxley and Cassagnoli come out. And I thought, maybe I'm wrong, and someone can easily correct me. I thought they did they had like a little Iron Man overlay on top of the – like it was like Wild Thing. So maybe I'm wrong. I thought – I heard that. So and I may have manifested it, you know, with the shoulder pads and, you know, and being Hawk, being one of my favorite friends that I made over the years in wrestling. I love that. And to be like, right, like I'm like, I'm not trying to be in the way. I'm just trying to get a beer. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy. So it was awesome. So just nonstop action from start to finish. There was a lot of I will say this. There's a lot of fans. I mean, because, you know, I don't know what the official number was, but, you know, rumor and innuendo, like 16,000 or whatever. At the box office, they had one ticket for sale as of 8:02 p.m. There was one ticket remaining for $77.
So it. Clearly this one was not ticket. A sellout, and they lied to us. I'm kidding. One ticket. That's hilarious.
Well, I'm guessing they eventually sold that one ticket. But there was a lot of, I will say, my official predict, I would say over 50% of the people there were there to see Sting's last match and were not completely up to date on the AEW product.
Okay. At the same time, they seemed very invested in the show. I mean, there was, it's hard,
yeah, they
to
loved
say.
It,
normally you can kind of pinpoint during an AEW show when it's become a little too much. Now, this show only had two pre-show matches, which was better than when they try to cram in three or four. And it just starts to kill the crowd. But still, the pacing of the show with no gaps in between usually does kind of start to take its toll later in the night, and then the crowd bounces back for the bigger matches. But in this case, it was hard to say whether that was happening or if it was just what they were putting out there at that time. Because, like, the women's match, Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo didn't have a great crowd reaction, but I also understand why. You know, Toni Storm's a fun character, but she doesn't play a heel. She's not out there trying to get heat.
Yeah.
Purrazzo's new to the company, isn't all that over as a babyface, and so I couldn't blame the crowd. I couldn't really tell, is it the match? Is it just that time of the night? But for a crowd that you say was 50% there for Sting, they were really engaged and seemed to enjoy themselves. So safe to say AEW made some new fans last night?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, so my mom was up section 110, and a couple of my buddies, and I was down on the floor. And so I was going like back and forth and kind of gauging, you know, what the crowd down there versus the crowd up there were. And, a lot of people did not understand the meat thing, but they liked it. But they had no idea what they were watching. They were just like,
gotcha.
What is this? Why are people saying meat, and why am I saying meat? So they were participating, but they were like, it was utter confusion. They were just like, I do not understand what this is.
Now, I know for the rest of your days, you will be able to tell people you sat second row for Sting's retirement. But what I will tell people is that on the day of Sting's retirement match, Johnny Fairplay had worse seats than Scotty Riggs.
It's true. I tell her, I was just like, I know, how do I know that guy? And I was just like, oh, my God, it's Scotty Riggs. David Crockett was sitting there for a while, and then he moved to the other side. It was just, I mean, I didn't expect to see Ricky Steamboat. I loved that, and seeing Magnum there, I think he enjoyed it. So and then Rick was just like, Rick was ready to cry. He was so happy. Just what, like, it was really cool. So and then for Sting's sons to come out in the old outfits, that was awesome. Like, people, because when Sting's first son came out there, they're like, oh my God, Sting cut his hair and did, like, you know, and then, you know, it took a second. I'm like, wait a second, that's not Sting. But that was really, I mean, everyone popped for everything. Darby's insane. Will Ospreay is the star. However, they've got so much money to buy music for people, and they have so much money to do, you know, like this is a huge company. Will Ospreay, I sat on his entrance. I counted 8 different moments that there should have been the bang fireworks going off, because that's the difference between a star and a lowercase s star. And there is something special with Will Ospreay. There's no doubt about it. They paid the money for this guy. Spend the extra money. That guy deserves the pyro when he comes out to differentiate him from being like, because once again, 50% of the people had no clue who this guy was. At the end of the match, they're just like, wow, you know, that guy's great, you know, and the other guy's great too. However, like that, when he comes out, there should be a signal to the crowd that this guy is something extra. And I would definitely add pyro to his entrance.
Yeah, I like that.
As I said, I counted 8 moments that I would personally add an 8. Like, it was just like when he comes out, boom, because he came out and he did his little thing, and you know, and there was no boom, you know, and I'm just like, why is he doing that then? If he doesn't get the boom, then you don't do that, you know, like just walk out. As I said, it's not going to take much, and they have the capabilities, so just do it.
I know we have callers waiting, but I do have to ask you 2 quick questions here, and I'm sure other stuff will come up throughout the course of the night. Number one, did you see Lex Luger, who was said to be in the building, but was not shown on television that I caught anyway?
I did not see Lex Luger.
Okay, and also, how was JR getting around? He mentioned that he had a walking cane. Did he seem to be doing all right?
I saw, like, I basically looked over, and out of nowhere, I saw JR sitting there. I'm like, oh my God, when did JR get here? So I did not see him come sit. Like, I think they didn't do the big entrance, you know, the Boomer Sooner. So as I wasn't,
sure.
You know, I was in La La Land, dude. Like, I mean, it was I missed the first match. Parking was insane. It's the most people that have been to the Greensboro Coliseum in years, you know, like, unless, you know, Jelly Roll has been there or whatever. That's about the last time they had that many people. So I got in and got to my seat, during the second match. It was adrenaline overload. I mean, like, I was just like, this is cool. I'm sitting second row. There's Magnum TA. There's Nikita Koloff doing selfies. Like, I'm like, what am I watching? So, yeah. So I was easily distracted.
Yeah, no, I wonder if since they didn't do the big entrance, if they maybe wheeled him down. And then he did mention he had a walking cane, so I assume he was able to do some walking, but he's been through hell and back with the cancer scare,
yeah,
and also breaking his hip. It was nice to have him there. I was very happy that he was able to make the last 2 matches on the show and certainly be a big part of sending Sting off. All right, with that, we will get into phone calls. The number to join us again is 773-897-6321. I'm Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net. He is Johnny Fairplay of reality television fame. We are here the Mondays after WWE or AEW PLEs or pay-per-views. So the next time we'll be with you is the Monday coming out of WrestleMania weekend. Yes, it is almost here, just a little over a month away. Always at 1 Central, 2 Eastern. And again, it'll be the Monday coming out of Mania itself. With that, we're going to start with a usual person who often fills in if Johnny can't be here. 405 and 262. You are next in line, so sit tight. 615, I assume this is the one, the only, Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
It is, gentlemen. How are you guys doing today? Always fun talking with you after these pay-per-views or PLEs. Always a pleasure.
Good to hear from you, as always. What's going on, man?
All right, Johnny. I'm definitely excited you had a great time, man. And I should preface this by saying I did have a really good time watching it. It was a really, really fun show. I do agree with you guys on that. I would give it a – Jason, I think I'm with you on a B+. I can't go A because there were things I didn't like about it. But the wrestling was fantastic pretty much all the way around. There was a few things. But here's my main thought I wanted to bring, because I talked about this. I got on the PW Torch after the show last night, and I had to talk to you guys about this. And Jason, I haven't heard you and Jake and Will's review, and I will tonight when I get, you know, or sometime today.
What a slacker.
Again, I know. So
me too. I'm 40 minutes in. I didn't finish.
Oh no!
Oh wow!
Oh man! Johnny.
Well, man, I mean, it sounded like you guys were up until midnight for a pay per view.
I got home at 2 a.m.
Oh, wow!
Getting my chair out of there was quite the quite the battle.
Oh man, that does suck. That part sucks. But all right, I think you guys are going to disagree with me on this. This is fine. I think I'm in the minority on this. So we got to talk about the Ospreay-Takeshita match, because again, Jason, I'm with you guys. Yes, like going into the match, I'm like, okay, all very bad build and very bad everything of Callis just saying this is going to be a great match. That's not the build I want to see going into a match. But okay, I know going into this match, it's going to be a fantastic match. Of course, yes, it was a fantastic match. Like, no one's – I'm not even denying that. My problem is, and I think I'm going to have to get used to this, as big of a star as Will Ospreay is, and am I excited to have him in AEW? Of course I am. I want people to succeed. I want Johnny, I'm like you. I love wrestling. I want people to do well. My issue with the last 5 or 10 minutes of that match was, God bless America, there was no selling at all. There was none, Johnny. Johnny, there was none. And I understand it's about the high-flying, the cool counters and the cool – I agree with you guys. Like, that part was cool. But I just – I personally, in my wrestling, even in the storytelling, I want some selling. I want some, like, oh, that hurt. And it never hurts them. They just get right back up and go into the next thing. And it's like it didn't take me completely out of it, because, again, while I'm laying there, I'm like, this match is awesome. But at the same time, there's things I don't like about this. Talk me off the ledge. Help me to understand why this is good about the wrestling we're seeing now, and how, again, Ospreay's a star. I'm going to love him. I'm going to enjoy him. But I want some selling at the end of my matches. If you're going to go 20 minutes, help me invest in the fact that these moves are supposed to hurt. You're supposed to feel something. And I know it's the adrenaline and all of this kind of thing, and I get some of that, but it was too much for me in that last 5 minutes. There was just no selling at all at the end of that. What do you think?
Yeah, Johnny, you go ahead and start.
That's why I wanted Ospreay in WWE. I wanted a 3-month program with Kevin Owens so he could learn how to sell. I mean,
thank you. Yes, yes,
but
truth be told, I love you.
I enjoyed what I saw. I mean, like, it was a spectacle, I don't feel that the majority of the people there cared. I do care, but at the same time, I allowed myself not to care because it was such a spectacle. But no, I'm with you. I'm old school. You know, when Randy Orton puts you in a headlock, I pop, because he's just like, I'm not doing this crap. I'm like, you guys got 90 seconds of a headlock. Ready? Start your clock. So I'm for it, but it is what it is. I think it worked. However, I would love Will Ospreay to learn that discipline. And as I said, someone like a 3-month program with Kevin Owens, if you don't leave that learning how to sell and learning how to do that main event WWE style that is tried and true, then
great,
you know, there's
great.
No hope for the guy.
Yeah. So you're going to like what Jake Barnett had to say, Sean, in the audio review last night, because he was critical of the match for that reason. And I think it's a very valid point that you're all making. For me, I will hearken back to today's man of the hour, Paul Heyman. I think I've mentioned on this very show before. It just reminds me of what he was talking about. Legends. And he said, how do you make a blonde stand out? And I said, I don't know. And he said, you put her in a room full of brunettes. that was the key for me for this Ospreay and Takeshita match, is there were not seven other matches where it was balls to the wall like this was. It was, I mean, Sting certainly did some no-selling. It's his last match. You know, you deserve to be Superman there.
Oh, right.
But it was you know, the rest of the card didn't feature a lot of this type of thing. And so I'm more lenient of it when it stands out as a spectacle on its individual show. But I do think that, yeah, I would like to see more selling from Ospreay and Takeshita as we move forward. I don't know how much we'll get. It may have been. It might be, you know, Ospreay's really toned it down compared to what he used to do in Japan, believe it or not. And I know for people who are newer to seeing him, that may come as a surprise, like what the hell was he doing then? But he really has, and I'm hoping that maybe it's just go out there and wow them early on and then pull back a little bit. But he is special, so is Takeshita. I get the criticisms. It's a style. And, you know, I don't know for his career longevity if it's a style I want to see him work consistently, but I really did enjoy the match. Sean, what else do you have?
No, fair points. I think my next thing was, I guess, going back to – I'll talk about this match, and then I'll talk about the other match at the end. Going back to – because I haven't heard a lot of people talk about FTR BCC. Again, the build to me – I think I'm in the minority. I didn't like the build to this at all. There was no defined heels or faces or anything. It's just, I mean, it's just, oh, we're going to fight each other, and Moxley's in this thing where I'm just going to fight people, and I haven't liked the build to it. I mean, the match was good. I don't think it was a great match. I think it was a good match. I think the end of it was better. They told a better story at the end with Dax bleeding and then Moxley kind of working on that. And, I mean, there was some fun action in the match. Again, I just would have had FTR win. I just think BCC just are undefined. Now, I'm hoping with Danielson maybe officially going face, I'm hoping, because I just think he needs to be a face at this point. With BCC, they'll just go full face, and they just need to because people want to cheer them, and I don't know what the heel thing is with them. They need to stop all that. I would rather have FTR win. I think there's more in them as a tag team. Like BCC, they just have different guys wrestle, and it's just like, I don't know where they're going. So what do you guys think of the match? What do you guys think going forward with the tag team tournament, and where do you think they're heading with both teams?
Yeah, I can make my end of it pretty quick, and then we'll turn it over to Johnny. I like the TV match more. I'm probably in the minority on that, the draw that they had. I just thought it took them a long time to kind of get to when they really started kicking into gear, and it was kind of a very slow 10-minute build. Once they got there, I really liked it. I figured it would go over 20 minutes because they just went to a 20-minute draw, and I do wonder if the reason that we saw the BCC go over is that Cash Wheeler has his legal issues that he's still dealing with, and so I would understand right now if they were kind of pulling back on just how much they spotlight FTR. And also, you know, even if it's not that, it gives them a mountain to climb. This is something they need to overcome. Johnny, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I at the conclusion of that match, I'm just like, okay, we're getting Moxley and Claudio versus the Young Bucks for the tag straps.
I think so. That does make sense. Tony Khan did say there will be, shockingly, a tournament to determine the new tag team champions. He made it. He said something about there's going to be more than one bracket to fill out. And he talked about this during the post-show media session. I think they want to try to tie this in with March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament, which is also broadcast on TBS and TNT. And so I don't know if maybe this year we'll get the first tag team edition of the Owen Hart Cup tournament, or if we're going to get this tournament now and then the Owen is still to come. I think what you're saying, Johnny, makes sense. Those will be the two teams that will end up determining who wins those tag titles. Sean, what else?
Yeah, and then I wanted to bring up really fast before my last point is, you know, Johnny, I know you disagree with me on this, but like the stuff with, I just think Wardlow is super cold. Him winning means nothing to me. I just think he's so cold. That match was just awful to me. The meat madness, the meat stuff is stupid. Stop. It's not funny anymore. It's not funny anymore. It's not. And the Undisputed Kingdom, I'm over it. Please stop trying to push them. It's not going anywhere. I'm in the minority on that too. I just think everybody's going to say, oh, it's great because they pushed them. They're pushing them. It's not. Like, let's get over this. It's not good. So, real quick, going on, I just want to talk about this thing really fast because I didn't get to really bring that up. Almost everything they did was, like you said, Johnny, was perfect. I thought everything they could have done without the WCW footage was perfect. I mean, it was just, it made you feel emotional about Sting's career, where he was, where he's come, the wrestler, he was, the person he is now, the respect that people have for him. Other than Darby trying to kill himself for no reason, which I know he wants to kill himself for Sting, I quote unquote get that, but Darby needs to stop with that kind of stuff. I just thought that was way too much over the top. But just pretty much everything they did with the Bucks getting the heat that they did, but Sting ultimately, it was great. It was so well done. I was very happy with how that did turn out. And Johnny, I hope you could talk more about the end after it was over, because it went off the air before he was done, which that was unfortunate. But I wanted to hear you kind of talk about that, what more he said afterwards. But I just thought, other than Darby putting himself out there for really no reason, everything else was just really great about the match. And I'm glad Sting got to have that send-off. And I wish him the best afterwards. And but Jason, you're the best, man. I appreciate you. Johnny, I want to hear more about your thing at the show. And Jay Moss, bring it home, man. I know you're next. So I appreciate you guys for taking my call as always. It's always fun.
You are the man. Always great to hear from you, Sean. Yeah, Johnny, tell us about what happened. So Sting basically he said he was getting his time cue, hold on, and then the show went off the air. They did not save enough time. Another one of my criticisms. And Tony Khan, after the show, kind of made it seem like, not a big deal. Everybody can go to YouTube and see it when it right. But it is, it is like it. You want your show to go off the air at the right moment. And so not that it's a deal breaker, but it was a little disappointing. I don't know if you remember specifically where he said that, but was there a lot more to it that we missed? I'm sure it's out there online. I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah. So, I don't know exactly when he said those words. So after the match, it was funny. Darby kept whispering to Sting. He's like, "Go do this," and then Sting would do it, and then he'd finish, and then Darby'd go back and whisper again, and he'd do something else, and then he'd do it, and then Darby'd go back and whisper again. So he thanked everybody, and then he was like, and then Darby came over, and he goes, "I gotta do this." He was like, "Tony Schiavone, get over here." And Tony Schiavone came over and handed the mic. He goes, it's Sting. And everybody popped. And then he was like, okay, thank you. And he felt like he was ready to wrap up. And then Darby whispered again. He was like, oh, yeah, Tony Khan, come out here. And then Tony was crying. Sting was crying. And so they did a deal there. And then they kind of wrapped there. And then everyone's standing there. And all the chairs are zip-tied together. And so you can't get your chair until they unzip tie you. But like the guy beside me had a knife. He's like cutting zip ties. I'm like, oh my god, how'd you get in with a knife?
That's always comforting.
Like, there's, right? I mean, so but yeah, that was the big two things is having Schiavone do the "It's Sting," and then Tony. Yeah, good stuff.
Okay, so yeah, we didn't see any of that. And like I said, I'm sure it is out there online. It is worth watching the post-show media scrum because Sting actually sits down and takes some questions along with Darby Allin. One of the troubling parts of it, though, that ridiculous bump that Darby took through the glass and Tony's reaction to it, Ospreay also very bruised up from a spot that he did. Also talking about the danger of the Tiger Driver move and how it's the most dangerous move in wrestling, and he performed it, and Tony's just nodding along with him. I want Tony to be a boss, and I think he truly does care about the wrestlers. He wants to be friends and already is with many of them. It's time to rein some people in. There's just unnecessary things being done. And I mentioned it in my hit list today, available at prowrestling.net, that spot that Darby did, I think it comes from a genuine place of him wanting to send out his buddy in grand fashion. I respect that. But I also feel like it took away the spotlight from Sting more than it needed to with him taking this unnecessary bump, just carving up his back. He was a bloody mess. I just was grossed out by it. I think that you know, every time Darby gets up from one of these big spots, I'm amazed. In this case, it was just like, oh, God, why? But again, I mean, I know he's not doing it to upstage anyone. I think in his mind, this is really contributing to Sting's retirement match. But, yeah, there were a lot of people that seemed to be turned off by that. I'm not in the minority. What did you think when you saw that one in person, Johnny?
Well, I mean, I just assumed they did, you know, they were using, you know, the sugar glass and, it, you know, it was no big deal. Blah, and then afterwards, I'm just like, well, whoever you bought the sugar glass from, I would ask for a refund. That is the worst sugar glass ever. So, yeah, no, I think Darby's heart was in the right place. I don't think, maybe that's exactly what he wanted, but I feel that he was not expecting that to be the outcome, because I didn't expect that to be the outcome.
I don't know if that was sugar glass. That's the thing. I don't get the sense.
No,
that
I don't think.
And,
I
don't
know.
What would you expect? If you lay a sheet of glass over six chairs and you crash through it, I mean, what did he think was going to happen, John?
Well, no, I would like to think that they purchased sugar glass and then afterwards they're like, hey, and they call, they're like, oh yeah, we sent the wrong one, my bad. And it's like, well, can we get a refund, please, because that's not what we ordered. So I don't know. I just can't imagine I don't think Jack Perry booked this. So.
Yeah, I wonder what he was thinking watching this one at home. And I hate that. I mean, that little thing that, again, heart in the right place just did kind of take away one of the only negatives about what was a great retirement send-off. So the number to join us is 773-897-6321. Remember to hit 1 on your phone. I don't know what happened. He got bumped down, but I know it's him and he's been waiting. Let's go to 405. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
It is, in fact, Jay Moss from Oklahoma City, originally from Cincinnati, Ohio. What's going on?
Hey, not too much. And I just want to let 262 know that you were on deck, originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, now residing in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. It is the one, the only Jay Moss.
Yeah.
Now quit making all that commotion on your phone, Jay Moss.
I'm not trying to. I'm outside again. It's another nice day, so cannot complain about getting nice weather this time of year. But
yeah,
okay. I'll join you in the criticism of them not giving Sting's retirement speech the time it deserved. I would have just called off the All-Star Scramble and just said, hey, you know what? Tony Khan even said when he was faced with canceling the Meat Madness that, hey, you know what? We got to do it at a later time. The guys that we want aren't able to be cleared. And you could have spread that time out to the rest of the show, given a few minutes to other matches here and there. And that way, at least you could have solved your pacing problem. And the thing is, I agree with Sean. Wardlow is cold. He gave a great promo a couple weeks ago. It takes a lot more than that to get people invested. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I liked his segment with Chris Jericho a lot more than Will Pruitt did when he reviewed Collision for the members, pwmembership.net. I keep mentioning membership. I should at least tell you where to go get it, pwmembership.net. I like the idea of just moving that match off the show. I don't think it needed to be there. I think that, yes, there would have been, you run the risk that maybe we run short. That's okay. It's not the end of the world. You're doing four-hour pay-per-views with a pre-show that starts for God knows what reason. It's a 90-minute pre-show, but there were, again, only two matches, so I like that. It's a long night, and if you go off the air a little bit early, but you got Sting's full retirement speech in there, good. You know, that's fine. That's okay. It beats the alternative for me. So I agree with you. Johnny, do you think Wardlow's getting his title shot? Because there was a title shot at the end of the rainbow in this match. Is that going to be a TV match, or are they really going to do that at the AEW Dynasty show that they announced for April 21st in St. Louis?
No clue. No clue. Wardlow wasn't super. So I actually, while you're asking that question, I'm looking at a picture of Lex Luger there at the Greensboro Coliseum, and it looks like Jonathan from Survivor, like the big muscle guy, is pushing him in the wheelchair. I mean,
Jay Moss, I put you on mute. I'll come back to you, buddy.
It's probably just an indie wrestler, but it looks like Jonathan. And I just went to Jonathan's Instagram, and I don't see anything there, but it looks a lot like Jonathan from Survivor. So I don't know. I don't know. As I said, Wardlow or Mike, as we like to call him, Mike's got some work to get back to where he was. I mean, you know, if the whole deal is, you know, he turns and, you know, or, you know, he turns on the United Kingdom or whatever. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's, we're not there yet. And as I said, there was a lot of confusion from more than 50% of the people there of what they were even watching in that match. So to thrust the winner of that match into the main event of a pay-per-view, I feel like the next pay-per-view, Swerve Strickland should be in that spot.
Yeah, I hope that's what it is, that Swerve's going to get his singles title shot. You can do the Wardlow thing on television. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing it as a big TV main event, but it doesn't feel pay-per-view main event worthy by any means. I just don't think Wardlow's that over right now. But, I mean, baby steps we've seen with him. One of the issues, too, is that we don't know, is he with Undisputed Kingdom? Is he not? He was, to the point that he was nodding along when Adam Cole claimed Wardlow is going to win the title and give it to him. Who wants to see that? I don't. And now they haven't really shown them together lately, and that hasn't been part of the story. But it's still fresh in my mind when Wardlow's cutting these promos about how he's never had a title shot and he deserves a world title shot. Like, what, so you can just give it to Adam Cole? And it doesn't mean they need to follow through with that angle. It can be, no, I'm not giving it to you if on the off chance he wins, which I don't think he's going to. But still, I don't really – I just think it's been inconsistent. And when it comes to – was there anybody that was particularly over in that match that you didn't expect to be, Johnny? Just kind of give me the breakdown of how people were reacting to different wrestlers in the Not Meat Madness match.
Oh, the Not Meat Madness. Jericho, they sang the song and then they, half the crowd were like, "Hey, it's Jericho," you know, and the other half, you know, booed, but not like, you know, they just booed because he was wrestling he was wrestling more of a heel style, you know, cause, you know, he was interrupting pins and stuff, you know, and they're like, yeah, so, but yeah, no, that match, I don't know. They kind of like Lance Archer because he's tall. So that's good. I like, you know, Lance is a friend of mine. So I, you know, I'm always rooting. Hobbs, if not, I mean, as I said, the biggest thing in that match, people just wanted to say meat like that. Like,
sure.
As I said, there was confusion and then they're just like, oh, we get to say meat. Okay. I get it. And you know, so they said meat.
Yeah, and Dante Martin had a rough night. He kept going for dives and when he through the ropes, and when he did, he kept hitting his feet on the ropes. And he didn't have any, like, crash-and-burn moments, thank goodness, but he did come up a little short, you know, when he would try to do that, so that kind of jumped out, too. But, J-Moss, I'm bringing you back on. What else you have, buddy? There was just some background noise, so I just figured I'd put you on mute.
Yeah, that's fine, and I'll try and ride the mute button myself if I need to. But my other thing about is, and yeah, Martin came up short multiple times. I gotta wonder if the ring was set up a little differently for something further down or further up the card. Because, I mean, normally he makes those dives. I don't know. But my second question is related to the World Heavyweight Championship picture. I mean, obviously we know Wardlow's getting a title match, and I do think that's a Dynasty. I mean, is there anything wrong with pushing Swerve's title match one-on-one to Double or Nothing?
I just hope you don't run the risk of him cooling off. I guess that would be my only concern. Yeah, you can do it. I need a good reason, you know, and maybe it is just Joe tells him, sorry, you know, you didn't win. You got to earn it, something like that. I also, watching that match, wonder, somebody brought up the Face of the Revolution ladder match, and that's gone. I don't know why they just didn't go with that gimmick. I wonder, do they feel like they've had too many ladder matches? Is there a big ladder match that they have planned coming up and they didn't want to go to that one now? So, yeah, just kind of weird the way all that played out. Was there anything else, Jamos?
That was me. That was me that brought that up last week.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Yeah.
As far as Dante Martin coming up short, yeah. As far as Dante coming up short, I mean, we all have off nights. Ask my fiance. I mean, yeah.
All you got to do is go 1 for 3. You know, 333, a lifetime hitter in baseball. You're Hall of Fame worthy. So it's not so bad.
Hall of Fame, brother.
1 for 3. Yeah.
All right.
Jay Moss, anything else, bud?
Yeah, one more thing. Going into tonight's Raw, I mean, do you expect anything to be announced going into Mania, like a tag title, like opportunity or something like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it'll be that specifically, but we're getting to that time now where we're going to start. You know, I think we know the big matches, and technically they still have to make the one official with the big tag team match that was set up on Friday. But whether it's this week or next week, yes, I do think they will start kind of filling things out, or at least providing a map to how they're going to get to some of these matches. Will there be, is it a tag team turmoil match that they're doing at Mania, or is it, no, they're going to do something on television to determine who the challengers are, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I think now through Mania, we should be in for some newsworthy television shows. Johnny, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm expecting Cody and Seth to say no. They don't want a tag match. And
we're good.
They're not man enough. they have tickets for a musical on night one. They bought the tickets months in advance, and there's just nothing they could do. They can't change their schedules. So yeah. So no, as far as the tag team thing, there's two schools of thought. You know, there's people like the Street Profits and the New Day that you feel deserve to be on WrestleMania. However, we heard, you know, Nick, what's his name? The GM for SmackDown.
Nick Aldis.
Nick Aldis. Yeah. Nick Aldis said he's going to be talking with Adam Pearce to figure out the tag team thing. And they'll have an announcement soon, which I'm guessing could be as soon as tonight. You know, so maybe we do a tournament on both Raw and a tournament on SmackDown, and then, you know, we get DIY and Pete Dunne's group in a three-way for the tag belts. So as much as I want everyone to get that WrestleMania bonus and to get that WrestleMania moment, I personally don't want tag team turmoil at WrestleMania. That's just me.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the way it works these days, I don't even know if there is a bonus anymore. You know, they're paid
yeah,
so
right.
much differently than they once were. And, you know, it is about the moment. Everybody wants to be on that card. But I do think the bigger priority should be in putting together the best possible card rather than pleasing everyone. It may sound harsh, but that's reality. I mean, that they're in the business of entertaining their fan base, not making everybody happy that, you know, that's backstage. I also wonder if we'll get details on how we get the Intercontinental title challenger or challengers determined on this episode too. It seemed like they were moving closer in that direction. But was that it, Jamos?
That was it. Just one final comment. Fair play. I can't believe you stuck your own mother in the 100 section, man. What the heck?
She's short.
Yeah,
she couldn't see. She couldn't see over it. It was funny. There was a gentleman three rows ahead of her that was standing up in the 100 section, and she less than politely told him to sit down. And it didn't work. And then another gentleman goes, that lady can't see. Sit down.
Nice.
Yeah.
So there is good in the world out there. Well, J-Moss, thank you so much for calling, as always. And yeah, I wasn't going to say it. I was going to let it slide. I'm like, he's on the floor and his mom's in the 100s, huh? How does that work? But yeah, I love that somebody stood up for her. Mama, fair play, not taking it. Sit your ass down, tall guy in front of me.
Yeah,
that there's nothing worse. And I feel bad for if it's just like a tall person and they're seated and you can't see around them. Like, what are they going to do? They're born that way. But when it's somebody that just stands up, or not that it's been a real issue for me, but I'll see it on TV sometimes, these fans that hold up the same sign every time they think the hard camera's on them, and it's like, you're on the hard camera's side. We've seen it. It's not that creative, and even if it was, we're tired of seeing it. The poor person behind them has to sit there and look at the back of that sign. Oh, my God. So bad. Anyway. So then we do have one more caller, and then after that, we're going to hear all about what Johnny's got going on in the world of reality television. If you would like to join us on the show, again, the number is 773-897-6321, and we'll have open phone banks after we talk to 262, and then we do have a bunch of emails to get to as well. 262, who is this, and where are you calling from?
Mark from Wisconsin.
Mark from Wisconsin, what's happening? I hope you got the same nice 70-degree weather that I did yesterday in Minnesota.
It was like low 60s, but yeah, it was great. You know, early March, low 60s, can't complain.
Yeah, anytime I'm wearing shorts the first week of March, it's a good March.
Very true, very true. And what you just said, I'm 5'1", so you were speaking to my soul right there. Yeah, I have so many sporting events and concerts, I'm like, yeah, it's just like, okay, I need to have someone who's, you know, need to have someone who's like 5'7" or shorter in front of me. I'm 38 now, so I don't really care as much. And so like last concert I went to, somebody was there with a taller man was there with his much shorter girlfriend, and I just asked the two of them, hey, can you guys just switch? And they were nice enough.
There you go.
So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just a little public service announcement. Think of the people behind you. You know, just turn around. Like, I remember I met up with Wade Keller and some other folks at a show, and we ended up having one open seat, and there was a little kid behind us, and it was like, well, why don't we leave that seat open so the kid has a great view the entire night. It only takes a second. You know, be courteous to the people behind you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to start with the world title match. I think you mentioned this in your review of the show. It was like, you know, Excalibur kind of told this, you kind of told it at the end, but like they were kind of sort of telling the story of like, hey, did Hangman kind of, you know, throw in the towel a little bit? And like they were really subtle about it, if they were doing it at all. Like, I mean, like, I think they should have done it in a much more, you know, there was obviously much more like obvious ways to do it. Like, I think you share my opinion. Donnie, do you share that opinion?
Of what? Exactly.
So
I can explain it to him. So what Excalibur said after the match was he was basically playing up the mystery of whether Swerve tapped out Hangman tapped out to prevent Swerve from winning, which would work with the story they were telling going into the match.
That's not what we saw.
Right. And I covered that in my hit list today. I think Swerve should have been like standing on the top rope, ready to hit a double stomp or lining up for his in-ring finishing move. And instead, I think he was just down at that time. So it really didn't mesh with what Keller was talking about.
Yeah. Now that's it. I've been on here with you and listen to your coverage, you know, on the .NET Weekly, like, you know, going into the match and your proposed finish, which, you know, I think would have worked just fine, especially with the match placement order. That's not the story we saw. It was just, Hangman, you know, was in the Kikina clutch and tapped, and it had nothing to, you know, is because he was hurt. So it had nothing to do with Swerve. And so, yeah, as I said, you know, I didn't hear, I was within earshot, but I didn't hear the commentary, but that's not how it came across.
Thank you for saying Kikina clutch, because I keep typing it and then I'll delete it because they say rear naked choke. And I'm like, all right, I'm not a big MMA guy. Maybe there's a slight difference or something, but I don't know that there is. Anyway, back to you, Mark.
Yeah, and I would just sort of add, like, they in the go-home promo, sort of brought up his time he invaded Hangman's house, which I actually thought when they were doing the double turn with them, they were going to kind of retcon. And, like, I don't know why they haven't gone down this path, because it seems like Swerve has a pretty easy explanation for why he did what he did, which is that, like, I knew that you were at home. I knew that your kid wasn't home. I knew that your wife wasn't home. I wasn't actually trying to invade your house. I was doing it to play mind games with you because I think you're mentally weak, which doesn't paint him in the best light, but does paint him in a better light than him maybe being, maybe kidnapping his child, doesn't it?
Johnny, what do you think?
I was listening to the fix with Todd Martin, and his suggestion is let's just not talk about it, and maybe if we can pretend it never happened. But I mean, it's a lot to walk back.
Certain things. I was just going to say I'm a big advocate for explaining things, but there are certain things you reach that point where it's just like there's no explaining this. Let's just stop talking about it. I think Todd's right.
So I'm gonna ask a WWE versus AEW question. So, you know, but this question is sort of premised on Okada actually debuting in AEW and not going to WWE. So if he does in fact go to WWE, this whole premise of this question kind of goes up in smoke. But assuming he does, that'll mean there's four former IWGP heavyweight champions in the last year that have gone to AEW instead of WWE. I don't think there was much interest in either direction with Kota Ibushi, but I imagine WWE is interested in Okada and Ospreay and Jay White, and yet they've all chosen AEW instead. And the question I have, and this might be I may be wrong in what I'm saying, if some of this might be like NXT, like if you're on the phone with Jay White, you know, if you're from WWE and you're talking to Jay White, and the letters, and, you know, they bring up NXT. You know, if you're Jay White, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Did you say NXT? Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm going through a tunnel. You know, the reception's not good, click. Like, I don't know if, you know, these super blue-chip prospects, I think there would be a very understandable desire to not spend a year working in front of 300 people on a soundstage. Now, that may not, this entire premise may not be true. Like, WWE may be like, yeah, we'll bring you in. We'll shoot you right to the main roster, even though you've never been here before. So just getting your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so it's right, different for each person. Yeah, go ahead, Johnny.
If Jay White had signed to go to WWE instead of AEW, I don't think he's on the WrestleMania kickoff show. Just saying.
No. Yeah, I don't think we're getting a 12-man tag featuring Jay White, but... what I was going to say is it's different for everybody. I don't know that they had any – yeah, Kota Ibushi, let's just put him aside. I don't know. Everything I heard, and this has never been officially verified. I don't know that Jay White's ever commented on it publicly. But what I heard was that WWE did have interest, and he had interest in them, and there was unofficially a hiring freeze with Endeavor taking over before the TKO merger and all of that. And that's kind of opened the door for him to go to AEW. I think they did have WWE had a lot of interest in Will Ospreay. Don't know what kind of offer they made him, but I think with probably and I'm speculating here. Ospreay has outright said it, and if Okada does follow as everyone expects to AEW, I wonder how much of it has to do with Tony Khan being willing to fly them in, let them live in their native countries rather than expecting them to move over here like you would have to for WWE and work. You're working a reduced schedule on top of it. And with Okada, everything that the buzz has been that, yeah, they were interested, but at the right price. You know, and it wasn't going to be a break the bank thing to get Okada. And I think that makes sense because as great as he is, he's unproven in terms of being a draw at that level in this country. And maybe AEW will make them regret it. And maybe Okada is going to be a huge draw in this country. But for WWE, I don't think they were willing to just throw out, you know, a massive offer at him hoping to get him. I just don't think he was as much of a priority as maybe he was for Tony Khan. So it is a little bit different in each case, Mark. I doubt that NXT had anything to do with it.
Fair enough, fair enough. Although I will just say, you know, you mentioned Jay White wrestling at a 12-man. You know, as much as he may not have wanted to do that, it would probably be better than wrestling that, you know, that mafia guy in NXT. I forget what his name is. But, you know.
Tony D.
Anyway.
Andy McDonough. Okay, that one.
Donna does look like a mafia character from a movie. He
he's got the look.
Yeah,
he's a Pop Funko mafia guy.
I wanted to ask one question about Logan Paul, and I wanted to ask this to Johnny specifically because I think you were kind of an expert on the subject. I remember during the build-up to the match with Kevin Owens, Kevin Owens mentioned a line during his promo where he was like, there are certain things that we're still not allowed to talk about with you. And I don't know Logan Paul, and so I went on his Wikipedia page, and Kevin Owens is pretty clearly referring to what happened in Japan. And it made me think that, like, I don't know why Kevin Owens said what he said. I don't know if it's true or not. But, like, it's something they shouldn't bring up because at that point, Logan Paul goes from being, you know, a wrestling villain, like, somebody that you just, like, want to see lose, to being somebody that you just don't want to see. Like, you want him, you know, excommunicated from society. And, you know, John, you know, you were a villain. And is that a, like, are you always cognizant of, like, okay, there's a line that I can't cross where, like, people want to see me, you know, get my comeuppance, but then there's a line where it's like, no, people just don't want to see me at all anymore.
Yeah, no, there's a fine line you have to teeter on, you know. House of Villains was I was very fortunate in that we all knew where that line was and we stayed on the quote unquote right side of it, and there's traitors being a more of a deceptive game. There are people that I felt did stay on the correct side of it, but according to social media, they didn't, and they've been attacked, and these are my friends that have been attacked, and I have friends that were attacked by some of my other friends. I was at the New York premiere, and I confronted a reality television personality about what they said on social media about one of my other friends, and they're like, well, you know, that's what I thought at the time, and I was like, okay, but that's not true, so how about taking it down? And it's just like, no, I'm allowed to say my piece. And I'm just like, yeah, but, like, you know, but if I'm explaining to you that it's not true and we're friends and you trust and value my opinion, you know, there is a fine line and it's a disheartening fine line because, you know, to be a quote unquote bad guy or a villain, you have to do bad things or you're not a bad guy. And, you know, the Logan Paul thing, you know, it was bad. It was in poor taste. But from everything that I've seen, he's addressed it and apologized and moved on from it. You know, Kevin Owens sneaking that line in, that's Kevin Owens being Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I think he's trying to add a bit of realism to it, I believe. And I don't know of any friction between Kevin Owens and Logan Paul. I follow Logan Paul's wrestling career, but I'm aware of that story, with him going through an area with, dead bodies where suicides take place in Japan and filming it. And, you know, you just hope that, okay, he was younger and dumber and did learn something from it. But I also wonder when Owen says that, if he's also, you know, he wants to go at him for the energy drink. And because, you know, hey, energy drinks, I'm not saying that I don't have one, but some people do, you know, will point out how bad they are for people. And so I think it's a little bit of everything.
Especially kids.
Things they can't go after. And it does add a dose of realism. You know, it really does.
Yeah.
Mark,
well,
do you have
more? I agree. I mean, I would just say, like, I was completely, I don't know anything about Logan Paul. I was completely unaware of it I don't know how many people were like me, where it's like, huh, what was he talking about? And it brought this story to their attention that they would not have otherwise known. And you know, what to Johnny's point, like I went down, you know, a bit of a rabbit hole, and I like, figured out, okay, this is what he said this month, this is what happened, and blah, 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 blah. And but I'm not like, I'm mad about with him about it, but I don't think if there's something that, you know, in WWE's interest, they should like be shining a spotlight on. But last thing,
Real quick, J-Moss, there's a lot of things that sound good on paper. I'm sorry?
This is Mark. J-Moss was the last caller.
Sorry, Mark.
No,
so there's a lot of things that sound good on paper, but when you actually – so, like I did the Dead Grandma Lie on Survivor, okay? My grandma knew about it. You know, I did the whole, you know, she's at home watching Jerry Springer. No one was hurt. I didn't kill anyone. And you know, and it you know, proved to be one of the greatest moments in the history of reality television. I'm still working, you know, 21 years later, you know, because of that one, you know, one line. I can say that Rupert caught wind of it before he went out there to do All Stars, and realized what a masterful play it was, and had asked his wife to come out there and say that she had a miscarriage. And she was no. And he's like, no, it's like fair play with the dead grandma thing. And she was like, no, it's not the same. He goes, no, it's not real. And she was like, no, you're not getting it. So, you know, and Rupert, not the master strategist that I am, because I remind you every confessional how great I am, you know, he didn't see the difference. And he goes, I'm not really killing a kid. You know, it's not really real. And it's just like, yeah, but like, it doesn't matter. So yeah, that would have the guy was literally handed $1 million at the, you know, they had America's Tribal Council and they did a fan vote. And if he does that move that on paper seems like a good idea, no one's hurt. This guy doesn't get $1 million handed to him.
No, there's no chance. No. In fact, I wonder who would have ended up getting it. But that's an interesting story. I don't remember you telling me that.
Wow.
Mark, do you have anything else, man?
Yeah, one last thing. So I already mentioned Austin Theory and how I'm not a trans. But I saw Eric Bischoff mention him recently and said that he thinks they should take Austin Theory off TV until they figure out like a more firm plan with him instead of him basically being Grayson Waller's sidekick the last few months, which is what he's been. Like, do you think Bischoff's on to something there? All right. With that, I will bid you guys adieu. Have a good one, guys.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Great questions today. Yeah, Johnny, I mean, they gave Austin Theory the big boost at one point, made it seem like he was, he was with Vince and all that. And it just hasn't gone all that well. I mean, he was in the television main event this past Friday night working with Randy Orton. I think they have a little something with him and Grayson Waller if they want to go the tag team route. But I don't know that it's like take Theory off television time. There was a time when I would have endorsed that for sure. But I don't necessarily feel that way now. I think he's doing okay.
Yeah, no, with Austin Theory, I think there is some talent there, and I think he's honing it in slowly, but he is honing it in. I like the idea of either DIY or Pete Dunne and Tyler Bates, them one of those two babyface teams beating Damian Priest and
Finn Balor
for the championships at WrestleMania. I think it's time. I don't think that Balor and Priest need the titles anymore. And so I think it's one of those feel good moments. A good tag match is really something special. You know, tried and true thing on big events like that. That's why I like the tag match at the PLE from Perth, Australia. So I would put the championships on a babyface team, and I like the idea of Grayson Waller and Austin Theory beating them because I don't think they need to beat Priest and Balor, but I could imagine them beating a smaller babyface tag team, and then and they win some matches by nefarious means, but then you get the tension, I see Theory when he does breaking out as a babyface and learning what he's learned over these past 2-3 years and just being a flashy moves a bit of a humility and he can be that that intercontinental that level star and that's a great spot. I mean, look at the Miz is a babyface in 2024 as in that spot.
Right. And hey, in the meantime, we see them on camera together. If they want to strengthen it, make it a full on faction, Waller in Theory hanging out with Logan Paul and a D-bag brigade is, that's good heel heat right there. So I think he's going to be all right. So we've reached that point in the show where we do have open phone lines. If you want to get on board with us, the number to call is 773-897-6321. Hit one on your phone. Let us know that you want to chat with us. We will get to email questions in a moment, but Johnny, you've talked a little, you shared some behind the scenes scoop regarding reality television. I'm guessing that happens quite a bit with your reality television venture. Why don't you tell everybody all about it?
Sure. You can watch for free at youtube.com/aftershow. And if you want to listen online on your portable device or even in front of your computer, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, any of those platforms, or go directly to the Spreaker app. And it's Reality After Show with Johnny Fairplay. I'm covering Traitors Season 2 currently. We've had Trishelle on, Sandra on, Janelle, Stephanie LaGrosa. Each week I'm joined by Jen Hoffman, who was on The Apprentice Season 6, and she's also a writer. Who's she working for now? She has big time publications. She's way too big for my podcast network, but I have her and Rachel Riley from The Traitor Season 1 and Winner Big Brother. We talk all things reality. Survivor just had its premiere, season 46 premiered this past Wednesday night. I was in New York at Bryson Wendell's event. Sari was there and Jam Jam and a bunch of others. And that was fun. Also, we have coverage of the Challenge All-Stars 4 coming up. So all those are available at Reality After Show with Johnny Fairplay across all those. And we're covering Australian Survivor, which season 9, which is on right now, maybe the best season in the history of Survivor on any continent. I am loving it so much. And we've had people from the show join us. We have more people coming up. I'm friends with over half the cast, which is insane. They live on the other side of the country and we're friends. And then on the pay side, at realitypatron.com, I have links to the Australian Survivor episodes. So if you'd like to watch, that's the easy way to watch it. And then we do a weekly Q&A there. And the weekly Q&A, we will be talking, behind-the-scenes stuff, like the Rupert story and stuff like that. I also take your questions. And we'll be talking the cast of House of Villains Season 2, which just leaked out yesterday. Shocked to see my good friend New York is back. Did not expect that. Richard Hatch is there and others. But, yeah, Tiffany New York Pollard is back for Season 2 of House of Villains. We'll also talk Traitors Season 3 rumors, which do not include Johnny Fairplay. I know. We are all shocked. Do not get that one. Don't worry. Boston Rob's there because we need him and yet on another show. All that's available at realitypatron.com. That's reality, PATRON.com. And I'm going back on tour. I'm taking a couple weeks off. I'm going to be in Wilmington next Saturday at a weed dispensary playing pinball. Yep, it's crazy. That's what I get paid to do these days. Just thousands of dollars to play pinball for 3 hours and smoke weed. So that's coming up in Wilmington. Check my social media to see where. And March 27th, my official tour for U.S. Survivor Season 46 begins. I will be at Jax's Bar, Jax of Vanderpump Rules. And it's me and King George from Australian Survivor, one of the greatest players to ever play the game. King George and I are doing a seven-city tour, March 27th, L.A., April 3rd, Durham, North Carolina. I have Jesse Lopez joining us there. April 10th, I'll be in Chicago. April 17th, Cincinnati. April 24th, Charlottesville, Virginia. May 1st, Charlotte, North Carolina. May 5th, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And the finale is May 22nd, but I will be at Dave Matthews in Tampa. Oh, go to SurvivorTix.com, SurvivorTix.com to get tickets. That's SurvivorTix.com. Tickets, I'm loading them up as fast as I can, folks. Right now I have Charlotte and L.A. available, but I'll have all the others up this week.
Weed and pinball. Where do I apply for that gig? That sounds like a good one to me. So it is time for some email questions. We're going to start with Jerry from Illinois, longtime .NET member. He wants to know if we agree the scramble made everyone look like idiots when it's one fall only. He says, when someone went for a cover, other wrestlers were just looking, and Archer and Wardlow were really bad at just waiting for their spots. I mean, I do remember at one point, I don't know what was going on, but I think they had that spot where they were all like, standing on the ropes and ready to throw punches or something. I don't remember what it was, but Wardlow just starts throwing like the lightest punches you've ever seen while he's looking around trying to figure something out. That stood out, but yeah, not a lot of love for not meat madness, Johnny.
Speaking of light punches, Swerve Strickland at the beginning of the match, his punches, like Swerve, my impression watching is he's just a nice guy. Like, you know, everything I've heard, you know, backstage about the guy is just, you know, just really nice. Like, you know, he doesn't, you know, steal 18-month-old babies. He's just a nice guy. And I would love for someone like a Joe or Adam Page who's not afraid to lay it in and make it look good. And I mean, you know, no need to hurt anyone, but I would love for someone to pull Swerve aside and say, look, man, you know, we all know what we're doing. No one's trying to hurt anyone. However, you're a star. You're a superstar. Make those punches look like someone that's not being nice out there.
In the building, who was the fan favorite in that match? Was it Swerve?
Yeah, no con. I was doing the dance. I love Prince Nana. I'm so happy they fine-tuned that whole presentation to get to where we are now, but yeah, no number one with the bullet. I don't know if they showed like when they were doing the entrances, I was doing the Joe chant with some people beside me, and the red light was on, so I don't know if I was captured there, but you know, I've been friends with Joe for, you know, almost 20 years now. So, you know, of course I'm going to lend support, you know, to my friend and you know, Adam Page lives 30 minutes from me. And so of course I'm rooting for him, and Swerve is just, you know, he's the hot thing out there. I mean, like it's over. He's fun. He's exciting. As I said, just tighten up those punches. I mean, just lay them in. I mean, you know, we're not playing patty cake, folks.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, too, considering who you're in there with. You know, Joe's not going to gripe, and Paige has a reputation for working pretty snug. The second question from Jerry also relates to Wardlow. He wants to know if he'd be better in WWE. He says, I think at the Performance Center, he could get more seasoning and be a very good big man, but in AEW, he's boring and either isn't getting the training he needs or because he's lower on the card, they don't care. I think they care. I mean, he just earned a world championship match, but Johnny, what do you think? Would this guy be better off spending a little time in WWE, and namely at the Performance Center?
Yeah, well, NXT. I think NXT would be a great place for him to – I mean, I don't feel that there's enough big men there to show him how to be a big – like, it's like when the big show is just like, I can do a moonsault off the, you know, off the top rope. And like, Kevin Nash is like, yeah, but you shouldn't. So don't.
Right.
So, like, I feel – like – I would love to see Wardlow underneath the Kevin Nash learning tree. I think that would do worlds for him.
Do you think we'd find out that, you know, in WWE, Wardlow isn't as big as we perceive him as being in AEW? Like, what was your take on that, seeing him in person last night? Does he, in person, is he as big as he comes off on television, or is it just because he's kind of surrounded by a lot of smaller people?
Yeah, no, he's around. And you know, we you know, in our meat and in our not meat madness match, you know, you add who's the guy with the big arms? You were asking about him earlier.
Powerhouse Hobbs.
Powerhouse Hobbs. So they're doing the, you know, like you know, Powerhouse Hobbs. He doesn't skip arm day. Like, I mean, he is a machine. It's just like, holy. So you see his arms. And then Wardlow, he's got a big frame. But those arms next to Hobbs's arms is just like, I wouldn't be bragging standing next to that. Like, when that guy's not in the ring, brag all you want. But beside that guy, it's just like, someone's arms are a lot bigger. And then, of course, you know, Lance Archer's great. He's just like, yeah, I'm tall. It's just like, you guys can flex and do all that all you want, but I'm tall. And he has a tramp stamp, so there's that.
Yes, he does. I do think Wardlow might be one of those guys that would benefit from being in the WWE system. I say that in part because I just think the style, the predominant style in AEW, there is a mix of styles, but it's not what a big man typically works. And with Wardlow, again, I mean, he's listed, I just looked it up, 6'2 on Wikipedia, so he's not a giant. I think that the WWE style might benefit him more. And just like there might be some WWE wrestlers, I'd be like, oh, they'd be a much better fit in AEW. But I do think he might be one of those guys.
Yeah.
John. Oh, go ahead, Jake. John, you sound like you got something to say.
No, that's it. Yeah, no, I agree. I you know, as I said, he needs to get under the learning tree from someone that understands. Pure mastery of WWE style, knowing how to play to the hard camera and do everything correctly. Roderick Strong was my MVP of the night last night. I mean, watching
really?
Other people not play to that hard camera and not knowing their ring position, like watching, like it was a master's class, you know, him, you know, the positioning when he's doing the Boston Crab and, you know, and the other stuff. He, like, his days of NXT were well used. So, like, yeah, it was, I just look for little stuff like that, and I'm watching, and I'm just like, oh my God, there's so many people that could learn from Roderick Strong. Like, if he chooses, you know, one day to be, you know, become a coach or, you know, or producer, whatever they call it in AEW, that I think a lot of people could learn from him. Those little things that you know, we kind of make fun of. It's just like, you know, Samoa Joe at, you know, is like, you know, you don't know where the camera is. You're like, you can't, you know, and Joe did know where
right.
the camera was, but, you know, and Finn Balor did not need 2 years to figure out where the camera was. Roderick Strong knows where the camera is. And I think there's some guys that can learn. I mean, it's fine when you're watching live, but I'm watching live knowing where that hard camera is and watching him play to it. And it was, as I said, it was a master's class.
John from Monroe, Michigan, he runs the website stackandshed.com, S-T-A-C-K, letter N, and then shed, S-H-E-D.com. He is a football guru. It is just about NFL draft time, and so if you want to do a little draft prep, check out John's site. Again, it's stackandshed.com. He says, Revolution was a great wrestling show, 3 4-star-plus matches. You list them as FTR and Blackpool Combat Club, the three-way, Ospreay and Takeshita. And then he says, I've only seen maybe 6 5-star matches in my life, and the Ospreay-Takeshita match may end up being one of them. He said Sting's last match was memorable and quite the way to go out, especially for a man who turned 65 next month. Wow, think about that. I said, but I never need to see anyone dive into a plate of glass ever again. Just idiotic. Darby may end up killing himself in the ring someday. Is it time for Tony to put his foot down and stop this insanity? What do you guys think? I mean, we kind of touched on it earlier, Johnny.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, at least I don't think that was the planned outcome for that spot. I don't think he wanted to give the look of someone taking a cheese grater to his back was the proposed outcome on paper. I could be wrong. Maybe if he wanted that, he's wrong, and then someone definitely needs to say something. But like, if he got to the bag, he's like, "Wow, that didn't go as that didn't go how he wrote it." So then it's just like, "All right, well, then maybe we need to write a little differently." Is it just me on here? Hello. I hear me and just me. The phone lines are open. Give me a call. Yeah, just chatting, professional wrestling. It's great. Love it. It's wonderful. Jason sometimes joins me. It's awesome. So yeah, 773-897-6321.